This is New York Now.
All right, and welcome to the New York Now convention cast. We're talking Wednesday morning. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union, co-host of New York Now. I'm here with my colleague Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. And we're happy to be joined by a guy who just crossed the breakfast banquet hall, walked through the lobby where the New York State delegation is meeting, and received more backslaps and enthusiastic, forceful shaken hands than probably a proud papa in a maternity ward. And that's Carl Paladino, Buffalo businessman, 2010 Republican gubernatorial candidate, and a guy who has been pushing Donald Trump to run for some office, be it governor or president of the United States, since 2012?
Yeah, pretty close to that. Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Karen.
So what does this mean to you? You've been Trump's biggest booster, and he is now the Republican candidate for the White House.
Well, I observed over the years as in business in New York State, as a business owner and a person that I have a very successful business, and I'm proud of my family, proud of the things that I've done in life. And I started coming out of my shell a little bit back a few years when I had a very unfortunate event, and it sort of I recognized the fragility of life.
You're talking about the death of your son in a car wreck.
Yeah. And I recognize that we have great problems in our state, in our city, and obviously in our country. I knew my nature. My nature is pretty much a type of person that I can do things other people can't do. I don't mind if people don't like me. It doesn't really bother me. I have a certain set of values. I try to project those values. And over the years, I watched this festering anger building up in I live in a middle-class neighborhood of South Buffalo, probably 80% Democrat, Irish, Italian, working man, blue collar, white collar. And I saw in those people that I live amongst that they just didn't feel leaded properly. They keep voting for the same jokers to go into office and send them to Albany or send them to City Hall. But they don't find any satisfaction later. They don't expect. And where we lost that expectation, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, well, you've been a real witness to Buffalo's decline, right? Yeah. Since, the mid-century, it was, one of the greatest cities. And it really suffered.
Yeah, at the turn of the century, Buffalo was a thriving metropolis and a very wealthy city, and doing very well as a transshipment point to the Midwest. And
we're talking about the turn of the last century, right? 1900, right? Had more millionaires, right? Than any city, and more millionaires than any city in America, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I forgot about this new century that we just turned. I witnessed that festering anger, and I tried to grab a hold of it a little bit when I ran for governor. I ran probably prematurely and without much experience in politics, but nevertheless, I carried a message, and I refused to compromise my values.
I know. When we look back at that, it seems like you were just a little bit ahead of the curve with what's going on with Donald Trump now. It didn't quite resonate in the way that the message seems to be now. I mean, what do you think has changed?
I think the festering anger got to a point of critical mass, and all of a sudden a man appeared who talked the talk and obviously had the ability to walk the walk. He has the clear ability to do what other people can only think about. His experience is wide, his education is wide, and his intelligence is super. The man has all the qualities of leadership that one would expect. He projects leadership. He projects determination. He projects a person who will do the right thing. And as his son said last night in his speech, his father is a very determined person. And if he puts his mind to something, it's going to happen. You can bet on it. Because for where there's a will, there's a way. And there's no such word as can't in his vocabulary. Those are things my dad taught me. And I think that's why we became good friends. Friends in a mission that he didn't recognize, I don't think, and I didn't recognize how ready the country was for that mission to be addressed, and he put his foot in the water, and he got right in there, you know, up to the waist and then up to his chin, and likes it. And feel so energized because of the support that he's received. I mean, the unwavering support of people who have had just about enough of the progressive movement.
There are, of course, there's a faction of the party, the establishment, whatever you want to call it, that continues to be uncomfortable with Trump as its standard bearer. I've heard a lot of people in the delegation say, you know, this convention, one of the big jobs is sealing the breach. Rob Astorino, Westchester County executive, who noted, by the way, that both of the presidential candidates have homes within his district, his county. He said that he'd like to hear Donald Trump use his Thursday night speech, which I think you would agree is probably the biggest speech of his political life, even though his political life only reaches back about a year now. He'd like to hear him acknowledge that there have been kind of rhetorical excesses that he's made, missteps that he's made. Now, you certainly, like Trump, are not a person known to for that type of a gesture when you're in a political campaign. You're definitely sort of a don't apologize type guy.
Thursday night.
What does Trump need to do in his Thursday night speech to you?
I think what you see in Rob is the political correctness that's been it's been implanted in him. By the last 20 years, 30 years of his life, he's been conditioned to think in a different way than maybe we think. The same with these establishment boys out of Washington, the elitist group, the aristocracy of America, the control freaks, okay, that are down there who are losing relevancy and they're losing power and they're losing access to money and they're losing what they worked for all their lives, okay, to attain that. That ability to move around in that little myopic world that doesn't pay attention to the middle class and forgot about them and left them behind, and now they're going to pay the dues. America woke up. America said, enough is enough, okay? We elect you. We send you down there, and you come up with this Kool-Aid nonsense, okay? You're incapable of doing what we want you to do, okay? They're fed up with Congress. I think Congress rating is like 6%. But the individual congressmen, for some reason, okay, they just keep electing them and sending them back. I think what's happening now is they're connecting the dots. They're not going to find that acceptable anymore. They're going to be expecting a lot more because all of a sudden they've been exposed to a whole new, especially the younger generations, a whole new way of thinking. You know, and I, you know, I saw that in my campaign. I saw that I'm dealing with a press of young people who have never experienced the freedom that I enjoyed as a young person, where my parents could sit there and tell me, Carl, if you do this, this, and this, and you do it good, and you put your heart into it, okay, you're going to have the opportunity to live the American dream.
Okay, this is something you and I spoke about on the phone briefly yesterday, and that is that so many of Trump, some of his most rock solid supporters, are working class folks who feel disaffected from global trade deals, who feel like globalism has kind of rolled over them.
Yes.
That is, of course, a condition that is endemic in Western New York. Do you think it's fair to say that that Western New York values or upstate values and challenges economically that are facing upstate are what's driving Trump's popularity nationwide, such as it is at this point?
New York is probably the example of the worst state for economic growth. We don't have it. Fine, we have Wall Street, but beyond that, New York State has been pillaged by the progressive movement, okay, that has given us what they had to, what they described as a conservative value, which is a farce. It's not a conservative. Free trade, globalism, trilateralism, okay, all that stuff, okay, doesn't help America, all right? Conservative values say you help America first, okay? You take care of America and you take care of our citizens, and that's what a real conservative wants to do. They came up with this nonsense. All of a sudden, people are able to connect the dots. They see now the connection of globalism to jobs and their lives. Okay, the globalism farce has got to end. We've got to get the heck out of it. And you saw it in Brexit, okay? You saw it over in Europe, a prelude to what's going to happen in America, okay? We're coming back to our shores. We're going to take care of our people, okay, first. Then we'll worry about the people elsewhere. We'll build up our military strength. We'll get our arms around this $500 billion a year Chinese, okay, deficit,
trade deficit,
which is so unfair to the American people. And we'll bring back jobs to this country at all levels, including the levels where some of our immigrants, okay, will be able to work.
Speaking of immigrants, and Casey referred to some of Mr. Trump's more controversial policies, like building a wall with Mexico, banning immigrants from Muslim countries. Some of the Republicans in the delegation don't agree with those positions, but I think that you do, because I think I heard you chanting, "We're going to build a wall," at some of Trump's rallies. So you're in support of that, and why?
Well, I think when he first said it, people said, "Oh," in the context of the restrictions that progressivism is put around thinking, okay? In other words, they say, oh, you can't do things like that. You can't step out of this box we built for you. Don't you dare step out of that box. Don't you dare say Merry Christmas. Don't, because you're insulting. I mean, they gave us all these rules, the progressive rules. And Donald Trump came and he gave you an intention way off from the outskirts of those rules, okay? And he said, I'm going to build a wall, and the Mexicans are going to pay for it. Well, it took a couple months, and then people realized, this guy can do that, okay? He doesn't have the same restrictions that the progressives describe to us as absolutes. They're not absolutes, okay? There's a different way of living. There's a different approach to things. We do it every day in the private sector. We negotiate from power. You don't negotiate from weakness, okay? We negotiate from power, and that's what Donald Trump will have. He'll have that power because he's willing to go and say, you mess with us, Mexico, you're going to have to pay the dues for that, okay? And the dues you're not going to like. So,
okay. The flip side of that, of course, is that type of empowerment for messages that have not been heard before, the kind of things that Trump has said on issues of race and that type of thing, is clearly it is empowering or it is being embraced by a faction of political thought in this country that I know you don't embrace, and that, of course, is the far fringy right, you know, white supremacists, that type of thing, who have embraced certain aspects of Trump's message. Is that something that you would acknowledge might be a little bit dangerous?
You know, you can't sit there and pick who's going to get on the bus with you, okay? From my perspective, I like his approach, okay? Yes, it sounds brazen, it sounds out of the box, okay? But in reality, it's all very doable by a man who's done it before. He's had the education, he's had the experience, and he's certainly illustrated to the people, okay, what they can rely on, okay, is something solid. You don't get anything solid with Hillary. She has no experience. She's never had an accomplishment. She lied to the people. She's going to create 200,000 jobs in the state of New York. She's lied all the way through her career, and obviously she's an unindicted felon at this point, and the American people have concluded that. Who are you going to put your trust in? You can put it in a Donald Trump, or are you going to put it in her? And that's what it comes down to. And you talk about those pushback, the Never Trump people and all that nonsense, okay? The Karl Roves, the Romneys, the Crystals, that whole crowd, okay, of people who are going to lose power and influence with the Trump administration. Those people are fighting for their lives right now. It's unfair for the general press. I'm not saying you, because I think you said it correctly just now. But who is the GOP? They're not it's not Trump versus the GOP. Trump is the GOP. Trump is the rank and file, okay? He has their support, the majority, okay, of the support. And he's perfectly able to speak for the the Republican of the future. The Republican of the future is not limited to in his thinking about trade and his thinking about these major issues that are confronting us.
I think you tweeted out a couple of days ago that one of the more recalcitrant Democrats who was sort of talking against Trump ought to be hung for treason.
No, not a Democrat, actually a Republican,
Republican
delegate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, a Republican delegate. Okay, she came out and she was encouraging delegates to violate the rules of the Republican Party, which I find to be treacherous, okay, to violate our rules and to come out with their conscience amendment, okay, and I thought that was treacherous. And using the old colloquialism, you get hung for treason. Okay, so or hanged. I guess people corrected me in the vernacular.
Grammar's
important in these cases.
But the point of her was that she chose to enter the arena. So you come into the kitchen, take the heat. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. You don't belong there. You're going to get heat from a guy like me. Okay, I'm going to come down on you real hard and real fast because I've learned in the past that's the way you react to something like that. You smash them down, okay, right away before they gain any type of leverage on you.
Now, you're running the Trump campaign in New York,
right? I'm running the Trump campaign in New York, and I really look forward to this effort.
What are you going to do about New York City and specifically Manhattan? Because you don't need to win Manhattan if you do well upstate on Long Island, but you need a certain percent of votes. Some have said maybe 30%. How do you do that?
I'm going to draw a line around the four boroughs, not including Staten Island, which I think we're going to win Staten Island.
Yeah.
We're going to win big in Long Island and in upstate, especially in the southern tier areas. We're going to get crossover like you've never seen before from the southern tier areas that have been denied fracking, denied an economic opportunity, okay, and denied just about any right to live in the state of New York anymore.
Yeah, but there are not as many voters. There's so many Democrats, particularly Manhattan, Brooklyn.
We're going to get such a wave out of Long Island and upstate New York that we will overcome whoever chooses to show up from Manhattan, Queens, the Bronx.
Are you going to try to convince anybody there?
I wouldn't spend a nickel there, to be honest with you.
In Manhattan?
In Manhattan, yeah.
Wow.
Queens, with Bob Turner, has come over to us. He's with us 100%. And I expect good things out of Queens to help balance the equation. But I look at Brooklyn, I look at the Bronx, and I just say I'm not going to waste my time.
Do you think we're going to see, and we know you probably might have to go, but are we going to see the candidate upstate again between now and the general election? I mean, he's going to have to concentrate laser-focused on swing states like Ohio, with the state we're sitting in right now, Pennsylvania.
New York, Donald Trump has declared New York to be a battleground state, okay? He gave me that personally at late at night one night. Okay,
he told me that in an interview that we did just before the New York primary that he believes that he's the type of
battleground state. So Hillary, get ready, honey. Okay, you're going to be facing some heavy stuff.
Well, it's kind of a matter of pride for him too, right? He's from New York,
absolutely.
So he can't just see it.
He's so engaged in New York State. I mean, he loves his home state. He comes upstate and he's like. A godly feature. I mean, you guys were probably at a number of our rallies. The Albany rally was just too much for him to absorb. It was just awesome.
That was a wild rally.
Definitely
a wild rally.
I was surprised. I mean, we just drew a ton of people, and I did the prep speech, getting out there and revving.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
And I'll tell you, these people, they're determined. Yeah, and they're talking to their relatives, and they're talking to their friends, and their associates in business or whatever. Okay, they're talking it, and that kind of advocacy is what makes a win. Okay, they're going to bring people out to vote, and they're telling them the reasons. They're connecting the dots up for them in their daily dialogue.
I have one last question.
I got one quickie.
And this is looking ahead to a couple of years from now, 2018. Do you think you're going to run for governor again?
I've told the press that I'm strongly considering it. Right now, my focus is on Donald Trump becoming president of the United States, and I'll worry about that next year. But I'm seriously considering it.
You think people might be more receptive to your message this time?
I think when we win New York State, I think the people are going to recognize there's another world, okay? There's another way of doing things. And I think it'll create such an atmosphere. This Donald Trump presidency is going to trickle down. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. Best single speech so far in the first two nights of the RNC?
Melania.
And what's your opinion? That, of course, that has perhaps been, that has been the most controversial speech that's been delivered so far because of the...
Are you surprised that Carl would pick the most controversial speech now? Come on.
Good point, Karen.
The most controversial
speech? No, because
he said the one that you thought stood out.
No, I thought you said the best speech. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the best speech.
Yeah, we did. We're teasing you.
No, the best speech, but it has been the most controversial, of course, because of the allegations.
Because of nonsense. The press didn't have anything to write that next morning, okay? There was no big issues out there. So they go pick up on this nonsense about plagiarism. Melania didn't write that speech. Somebody else did, okay? And if they did wrong, I don't know. I can't tell you.
But originally the campaign said Melania did write it, and then they backed off that and said, well, she had a couple of speechwriters.
No, I think what Melania, she was interviewed, okay, by whoever wrote the speech. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. Okay, the speech was so well structured. Okay, it was written professionally. If somebody used somebody else's words in some cases, fine. Who cares? They don't. I mean, that's all process. Let's talk about the substantive issues.
Well, what people have said is that is an unforced error that is indicative
only,
of a campaign
only
that
with
might
the
be
press, only with the people that go to J school. Okay, you go to journalism school and you learn right away: do not plagiarize. Okay, that's number one, and it's on your mind all the time. It doesn't matter to the rest of America; they don't care. All right, you use whatever you and I use words every day that might fit somebody else's speech someplace. Okay, we do those things, you know. Stuff happens.
I think we've been put in our place,
okay.
Casey.
I'd just like to note, I went to Northwestern, which has a great J school. I was an English major, okay? But I was born in Buffalo, and that's something that we wanted to start off talking about.
I was born in Lockport.
But,
so
yes,
have all,
there's three
all
Western
three
New Yorkers.
Yep,
a couple of three Western New Yorkers here. Yeah. Very happy to be joined by Carl Paladino. Best of luck for the rest of the RNC. I'm Casey Seiler, state editor for the Times Union. I'm here with Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio, and this has been the New York Now Convention Cast.